This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Politics, crime, and education. We're going to be talking education today, but before we do, I want to remind our listeners that we're keeping a very close eye on Hurricane Larry, of course. The Canadian Hurricane Center will provide a new update on the progress of the storm this afternoon. That's expected at 2 o'clock Island time, and we'll have the latest information for you on that throughout the course of the afternoon. So stay tuned. We'll keep you up to date on that through today, this evening, and into tomorrow, of course. The storm looking like it's going to hit sometime overnight on Friday into Saturday. So a lot of people on the east coast of the island battening down the hatches on that one and keeping our fingers crossed that it's not as bad as it seems to be looking right now. Well, yesterday, of course, was the first day of school for the year, and the mood appeared to be much lighter than it has been in recent days. I accompanied my young fella to school his last year at St. Teresa's. Kind of sad when you think about it, but there you go. But, oh my, the smiling faces and the excitement, and it was palpable. It's such a magical day, that first day of school. But still, COVID-19 remains a serious concern for students and staff, not the least of which, is, of course, is the fact that children under the age of 12 still aren't eligible for vaccination, and we have this darned Delta virus that is highly contagious that is making its way right around the world. Well, my guest today is the new president of the Newfoundland and Labrador Teachers Association, Trent Langdon. Hello.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Great. Well, good. You've been at this now for a little while, but tell us a little bit about yourself, because this is your first introduction here on Target.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know how long I'll be deemed newly minted, but we'll see how long that lasts. I'm originally from Central, Newfoundland and Labrador, Norris Arm, grew up there. Been teaching most of my career in Bay Roberts and Mount Pearl, most recently a guidance counselor in Mount Pearl, and now I've been involved with the NLTA for all of my career, and now president, I guess.
So what's that transition been like from teaching or serving as a guidance counselor to president of the NLTA?
Well, yesterday was the first true test. I really missed seeing the kids come back through the doors. Most of my experience has been in junior high, and just looking on social media, you can quickly see the excitement and the willingness to kind of leave COVID in the past. And as much as we all want to do that, there's no magic elixir to fix the COVID hangover. We got to be careful as we move forward, but at the same time, we really do need to embrace the fun and the joy about returning to school for sure.
We know too much about the fact that the last 2 years have been, like nothing we've seen in our lifetime anyway.
Yeah.
What is the general mood now among teachers heading into the 2021-22 school year?
Generally positive. We've talked with many teachers. It's all anecdotally, obviously. We're in a situation where people are just so glad the mask thing is being looked after, and we are in a much better place than we were in the last 2 years. But again, there's still some anxiety out there for those who are unsure about the variant. Certainly the K-6 teachers are certainly a little bit unsure as to how that's going to play out. They themselves may be vaccinated at the front of the class, but they may have 30 faces looking at them who aren't. Teachers are concerned about themselves and their families, but they're equally concerned about the health and safety of the kids in their class. And 7 to 12, same idea. Not everyone is vaccinated. Rates are high, but there's still a fair number of kids who have yet to be vaccinated. So it's still a deep concern for our members, for sure.
And it's all well and good to talk about this in general terms, I suppose, but if you're a teacher sitting at the front of the class and you've got a classroom of 25 grade 2 students, and all
That's
of a
right.
sudden somebody goes, achoo!
Yep.
Like they do, because kids do it, that immediately, your first thought is not going to be, say, bless you. It's going to be, uh-oh, what's going on here?
Well, yeah, and so just as quickly as we're happy to be seeing everybody and everybody back through the doors, we're ultimately one of the busiest institutions in the province at any given time. So that's where our communities come together every single day. Every single family in most communities are coming through the doors. So you're right, and you really need to be a teacher to understand the dynamics of the classroom. And your example there was great in that all it takes is one sneeze. All it takes is, very quickly we move into flu and cold season, and there's going to be a lot of different things happening. And just at the hygiene levels in schools, in terms of the kids themselves, we're dealing with kids, for God's sake. So that's always an issue for teachers, because we're always trying to make sure that if someone were to get sick, that's cleaned up appropriately, or if someone does have a cold, they're dealt with appropriately. But now it's the bar is certainly raised. So that's a stressor for our teachers. How do you take it from cold and flu season and then layer on COVID, and how do you respond appropriately?
And you simply don't know the difference.
Well, that's the thing, right? So the symptomology is very similar, but we have to respect what the chief medical officer has said in terms of how to respond if there aren't any symptoms, to deal with it appropriately in the schools, which means generally to report that to the office and ask the child to be sent home for the day or contact the parent and that kind of thing. As well for teachers, we got to look at these symptoms as potentially being dangerous and it being deeper than just simply a cold or a head cold or whatever,
So where are we now with masking policies in the school? I know that the Chief Medical Officer of Health has eased the masking restrictions that we've had in Newfoundland and Labrador, and that will change as the circumstances change and that sort of thing. But are teachers telling you they're more comfortable with masks or without masks? Because that's also a bit of a barrier when you're trying to teach.
Yeah. It definitely depends on who you speak to. I've heard from a lot of teachers who are kind of glad they don't have to teach anymore with masks because for various reasons, it's been overwhelming for them, and it's a difficult process. Others plan to wear them every single day. It's certainly being encouraged that as part of the back-to-school plan for teachers and our TLAs to wear them. However, it is a personal choice, but I got to say, we're hearing both sides of the argument at this point.
My guest today on Target is the president of the NLTA, Trent Langdon. We'll be back right after this.
Saturday morning, join us for the Irish Newfoundland Show. Send your request to irishnl@vocm.com or submit them online at vocm.com.
And my guest today is the president of the NLTA, Trent Langdon. We're back to school in Newfoundland and Labrador, an exciting time for sure. But Trent, are teachers comfortable now with the measures now in place in schools?
We've commented on the back school plan, and as much as we're in a much better position than we were in previous last couple school years, we've always just responded to it in such a way that we really do need the air on the side of caution here. We're a fan of getting back to normal just like anybody else, because we are human beings and we want, as human nature, to want to be back to normal. But we do need the air on the side of caution and to make sure that every precaution is taken within reason and still function in the schools. And it was reassuring to see that the ventilation piece is being looked at. We've advocated for that for a while. Our concern was primarily around cleaning protocols. There was a pullback on that to pre-COVID levels of cleaning, and it just made sense to keep it where it was recently. So those types of things. Whereas there are other ways that they could have loosened without more or less throwing a baby out with the bathwater type thing,
I know ventilation is a serious concern as well. And last year, where HVAC systems weren't available, teachers were cracking the windows, as Newfoundlanders say. How do you feel about measures in place there?
Well, having just come out of school myself in June, and June and September were infamous for hot days in schools with no air conditioning and so on. So major issue, and air quality has been an issue in this province, or teachers have been feeling and pushing this for years. So we're really pleased to see government respond with their approach to purchasing all these ventilation and air purification units to retrofit a school with full HVAC. That's a huge undertaking. taking, and hopefully there's a plan in place for that in the next 10, 15, 20 years. But these short-term measures, we applaud that piece. However, the quicker you get them in, we want to see them in place. I know they're on order and some have arrived, but the quicker the better. We would have liked to have seen that order happen much earlier than it did, but it is certainly a positive move forward to address that.
Well, it's certainly gotten COVID has got some movement in that regard, because I know for years air quality, as you just indicated, has been a concern for teachers in some schools where mold has become a problem.
Yeah, and so a lot of our schools are older, and no doubt through the years, various schools are closing down and new ones are opening up, and those things are being addressed. And living in the climate that we're living in, for God's sake, it's how can you not have mold and other types of mildew in your schools? But the air quality piece, it's unfortunate that it took COVID to truly address it. In the end, great, we now have them in place. And from what I've seen with individual teachers who've used them in the past, they find them valuable and good for their individual classroom. So it's a positive move forward.
Has COVID helped to highlight any ongoing concerns within the teaching profession?
I think the most obvious one is class size. That is, again, another issue that we've been fighting for a while. We're looking at 30, 35, 40, 45 kids, depending on the grade level. There are class caps in this province. However, it's deemed a soft cap where there can be additional kids added in there. We are seeing examples already where there's too many kids in classes, and we're trying to address those as they come up. But, yeah, the class size piece, which is linked to teacher allocation overall in this province. We've been advocating for a review of the teacher allocation model for years. There has been commitment at the government level to do that. So we would really like to see some movement in that regard, because it's pretty obvious. If you have one on 30 or one on 40 versus one on 20 or 25 or less, the impact is going to be that much stronger in terms of instructional support.
And where are we with that? You say there have been some commitments there, but is there any real movement in addressing the teacher allocation model?
Well, yeah, absolutely. We, in terms of actual movement, no. There's been a commitment that it would be looked at, and we are pressing government right now to say, okay, when is that going to happen? And that key individuals will be involved in that to truly look at the situation, because it's easy enough to say there's a certain number of teachers in this province, but just because the way the students are spread out in this province, and you have small schools and you have very large schools, to say there's a certain number in the province, and that it doesn't correlate easily that way. And so you might have small schools that class sizes are quite manageable, but our larger schools are really struggling in terms of not only finding space, but also having adequate space within their rooms to fit the students that need to be in there. So it depends on where you are in the province, but it is a provincial issue.
Air ventilation was one of the things, as you just mentioned, that COVID has pushed forward. But has the pandemic pushed some of the concerns that you've been bringing to government to the back burner for the time being?
Well, like anything, we want to make sure that any of these things aren't forgotten. But of course, you know, COVID as a take priority, the Delta variant, you know, that has to jump in there. And because in the end, that was front of mind for every single person in the province. And we wouldn't be in a good situation to be pushing other things when health and safety is of utmost importance. So some of the other things that we forever will advocate for is workload for our teachers. I know the PERT report, the recent PERT report, which came out within the last year or so, there's a lot of concern around that, and that could be a whole different discussion and a whole different interview. So, there are things that are on the back burner for us in terms of if you're truly speaking COVID, but they're never really put to rest. We are always pushing in that regard.
Well, let's touch on PERT a little bit.
Yep.
What is in PERT that, raised your eyebrows or caused you some concern?
Well, I'm glad you went there, Linda. there's a few things that jump out. Number one is there was a recommendation that the school districts be collapsed into, or the school district, I should say, English school district, be collapsed into government. And even though that's the case in other provinces, if that is to happen, and we've been informed that it looks like it will, that two big things for us is that, number one, services aren't reduced to teachers, and number two, that workload does not increase for teachers. So that's if that's in the hopper to be done and it's going to happen, we want to make sure that it's done in a way that it doesn't lead to heightened stress on the system. In addition, there were recommendations, two or three things actually, recommendations to remove administrators, which is our vice principals and principals and other district staff from the NLTA. And we very much promoted the collegial model between, excuse me, our principals and our teachers. That we feel that is the best way to run a school. If you pull the administrators out of the teachers' union, you are ultimately placing managers in the school system. And we do not need managers in our system. We need educators that are going to work closely with our teachers. So that's obviously another piece. That the third thing I'll mention is there was great question thrown into all teachers' ability to teach basic reading, math, and language arts skills. And that was a shot across the bow for us. We were not pleased with that at all. That pretty much undermined everything that we do. And we didn't take kindly to that comment. And I'm sure Memorial University would feel the same way. Certainly not going to speak for them. So there were several things that in many ways it was basically a situation where there was many recommendations made that didn't seem to have a whole lot of basis, and ultimately we have a lot of concern that there weren't many people who wrote the report that had much of an educational expertise or had expertise in the realm of education and instruction.
Is there room for improvement, though, on that point towards, overall academic outcomes in Newfoundland and Labrador? Because I know that's been a source of some concern for some time.
Well, that's always the goal, right? We always want to make sure that our students that are moving through are at the top of their game, and we're pushing out products, I guess, without sounding that as making kids objects, but in many ways putting people out into the workforce that are highly functioning and can contribute to the economy. And that's the ultimate goal of a strong education system, in addition to obviously quality of life and happiness and so on. But we've got a strong history in this province of putting out some extremely good individuals that have decided to say, some have decided to move on. And it's a situation where, you just look at the outcomes that are being met. Now, I know government is regularly looking at outcomes and ways to improve, but our teachers are forever pushing curriculum to the point that we want to do what's best for the kids and get them through the point of success.
On the point of this collapse of the English school district into government, I know when that was first mentioned in PERT, some people said, well, right now the school board is able to respond and pivot rather quickly. If a school suddenly raises a concern, something needs to be changed, something needs to be done, they go to the school board can get it done relatively quickly. But if you're dealing with a government department, then you might get bogged down in the bureaucracy. Is that a concern?
Certainly a concern, absolutely. If it's going to slow down getting anything done, we'd certainly be in opposition to that. As I said earlier, it's a service piece that our teachers rely upon the school district to get things done. Our parents rely on the school district to get things moving. If that middle person is being removed and those same services don't exist at the government level, then something is going to break, or something is not going to run as efficiently. So we are concerned, again, that services may be reduced as well. Workload may increase on teachers, because if there's someone currently at the district level that's responsible for something, and that may now either be deleted or not taken over by someone at government, that's concerning to us. So we want to make sure that transition ultimately ends up, it should be a betterment, shouldn't it? It should be betterment of services. If you're looking at, it's not just about trimming the fat, even though trimming the fat is a good thing. It should be about bettering the system, and that should be the ultimate goal for what's driving this.
Our guest today on Target is the president of the NLTA, Trent Langdon. We'll be back right after this.
Got plans for midnight? Bring your VOCM along with the best soundtrack for every night, anywhere. The VOCM All Night Show, midnight on your VOCM.
And my guest today is the president of the NLTA, Trent Langdon. And Trent, I know that this is another year under COVID-19, but how comfortable are you that schools can pivot if things need to change quickly?
Well, yeah, the pivoting push was on us in the last couple of years, and significant work has been done through the department and through the school boards to make sure our teachers were supported in doing the same, whether it be through technology for not just for teachers but also for students. So the pivoting piece is doable. That's certainly not the ultimate goal. We need to be ready in the event that were to happen. But it's to just loosely throw around that pivoting can happen. It does take some time. It does take some organization on the part of our teachers, and they need some support, especially at the higher levels. When I say that, I mean the higher school levels, prepping for online learning versus face-to-face in terms of materials and so on. It's a bit of a step, but to sum it up, yes, I do feel that our membership are in a good place when it comes to pivoting to the online piece for sure.
And what about things like the availability of Chromebooks for students to work from home if they suddenly need to do so?
Yeah. So that's, to my knowledge, they were asked to be resubmitted back at the end of last school year. So, you know, it would take some time, I guess, to get those back into the hands of kids and so on. But that's a logistical thing that would need to happen with time. And with the back-to-school plan, with low and high-risk scenarios already set out, the school board will be then responsible for getting that moving sooner than later. So it's, again, back to the point I said earlier, the pivoting piece is certainly doable. We're certainly better off than we were a year and a half ago in terms of going to the online piece, because it was brand new territory other than for example, our online learning section of the school districts and government that provide those distance education courses, which is a very strong program, but it wasn't en masse, I guess, for all the schools and students. So we're certainly in a better place for sure.
Teachers have an important role, as you know. You've lived it. Not only are they entrusted with academic learning and ensuring that a child is progressing developmentally well, but they're also responsible for keeping an eye on their social and psychological well-being. And I know some teachers were especially concerned that some students had fallen off the radar when things moved to online learning over the last year or so. Do any of those concerns remain?
They do, and the COVID impact, based on stuff I've read and the research I've done, and some of the other professional affiliates I'm connected with, is that, you know, this could potentially lag on for years. Whether it's, you call it PTSD, if you call it anxiety, you can call it what you want, really. That we're going to see impacts of this for a while. So teachers are well aware that the kids that are coming back through their doors, as of yesterday, are certainly, you know, some of them, their experience over the last year and a half has not been strong in the school environment. Some of them pretty much may have totally disengaged when it turned to online. Others thrived. So you got the full gamut here. And that's not unlike, excuse me, most classes where you've got kids that are highly engaged to those who I need a lot more work to get them fully engaged, but that is a huge consideration right now. And in terms of pressing curriculum, I know the school board has been saying, look, let's look at the social emotional needs of the students, and to not to put curriculum on the back burner, but to, you know, to edge into it. And the danger, or I guess the difficulty with that, is at the higher levels of say 10, 11, and 12, it's harder to put the curriculum aside too long, because it needs to be focused on in terms of grades and so on. But I think it's very evident that it needs to be focused upon. What we'd love to see is greater investment in terms of mental health supports in our schools, in terms of guidance counselors, educational psychologists, and, you know, this might be a prime opportunity to show that investment when the mental health wave is certainly going across the world in terms of need for support.
I've often wondered if years from now, you know, we'll be talking about the COVID generation, because 2 years is a big disruption for kids. And we're saying 2 years, but it could be even longer. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But will there be much in the way of catching up academically or otherwise? I know Tony Stack indicated on this show last week that the focus will be meeting students where they are and making sure that they're progressing from that point. Will it be more challenging than that?
Yeah, and I like that phrase, meet kids where they are, and I think that's what teachers have always tried to do. But certainly now, this is where we really need to go. And if we're in a situation where a kid is really struggling, those supports, in addition to, say, the face-to-face stuff in a classroom, those supports need to be there, whether it's, again, being able to refer them out to guidance counselors, to psychologists, to external agencies. Those additional supports need to be there. And to go back to the teacher allocation piece, what better time than to respond to the needs of our overall school system to say, look, we need greater numbers of feet on the ground to support our children that are coming back. And because every single child was impacted, it varies in degree as to how much they have been impacted. We can certainly write it down that every kid has been impacted in some way by COVID, and it could linger for a while.
Will more classroom supports be needed? I know teachers have long said that, you know, they want more supports in the classroom because children are of wide variety of needs and abilities and all the rest of it. But will more classroom supports be needed going forward to deal with, you know, some of this 2-year blackout period, so to speak? My words, no one else's.
Yeah, for sure. So it's ironic that COVID once again is bringing to light things that have already existed for a while. And not only is it class size is an issue, it's the composition of the class. So you may have 30 kids, and within that you may have 2 or 3 with autism. You generally have 8 or 9 with learning disorders. You throw in some kids with ADHD, other kids with heightened anxieties or other clinical diagnoses, and very quickly the composition of the room in some ways becomes more important than the numbers. So that composition piece has never really changed, whether it's pre-COVID or post-COVID or during COVID. And that's a recognition that needs to happen at the government level to say we're going to allocate based on the needs of the system versus the numbers of the system. So if the needs are the system is high, that's my background is in special services. I've done it for the last 15, 20 years. And part of my job was assessment and supporting kids in those classrooms and offering services. And I saw it every single day. Teachers feeling as if they could only do so much with what they had. And if numbers were lesser in terms of ratios for students, that would certainly enhance the services we could provide to those students.
My guest today on Target is the president of the NLTA, Trent Langdon. We'll be back right after this.
Take a break. Join us weekdays from 12:30 to 1 p.m. as we discuss anything and everything that's happening now. It's all on the table during your VOCM lunch break.
And we're back in just a little update. We're speaking with the president of the NLTA, Trent Langdon. But Trent, before we get back to you, I just want to let our listeners know to stay tuned because we will be going live to the Canadian Hurricane Center in Nova Scotia at 2:00 immediately following the show to get the latest on Hurricane Larry, which is causing some concern, especially for people on the eastern portion of Newfoundland. So we'll have the latest on that. So stay tuned. That'll be coming up immediately following this program at 2:00. Trent, you're new to this position. What are some of your own personal priorities moving forward as president of the NLTA?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question, Linda, and I think Larry is a little bit more important to me right now, but either way, I appreciate the question. With regards to moving forward, and this is part of the thing I ran on or part of my platform when I decided to run for president, is, you know, the mental health. We talk about the mental health and well-being of our students, but the mental health and well-being of our teachers through COVID has been very challenging. But even prior to that, the workload that is associated with running the 2021 classroom is high. The expectations are high. The social media expectations are high. The paperwork, you know, it's just a constant barrage of requirements to those teachers. So we want to make sure that the social emotional well-being of our teachers is being respected. That the issues are being identified, but there's also proper services in place for those members. In addition, I wanted to bring some attention to. And you talk about back burner stuff. This is something that hasn't taken priority recently. It's just the potential for violence and safety in our schools outside of outside of COVID, that we are concerned as an association around many times that teachers find themselves in very compromising positions, and whether it be due to an irate individual from the community or online barrage of words and phrases, or even physical attacks within the schools by students who otherwise do not know the difference, or a student that may be out of control at any given time. So that's another piece. So those two things are two things I'm certainly going to take under my wing and try to really develop in the next couple of years.
You mentioned social media, and it's creeping in just about everywhere. I mean, some people who might otherwise run for politics are saying, you know, I can't handle it. I'm not going to be at that. I can't subject my family to that. But teachers are facing that too. They have to be. Is social media changing the teaching profession?
Yeah, you ask any retiree of how the system has changed, current or recent retirees, I should say, who might have started 30 years ago and have just recently retired, or even those that may have retired, say, 20 years ago, that trying to teach now is totally different. Even when I started 20 years ago, it's a different time and place. And let's go to you know, grades are posted in real time, and expectations are there now that as soon as something is available, that it be posted in real time. So we have students checking their grades at 2 o'clock in the morning, and if they're not there, it's you know, maybe a question as to why they're not there and so on. So even students can't really rest. Years ago, you got your test back when you got your test back, whereas now it's almost like we need immediate gratification for everything. So that heightened level of responsibility is there in spite of what time of day or where the teacher is. But in addition, related to your earlier comment, is that social media really gives people an opportunity to, I guess, inappropriately attack a person or to put in question a person's professionalism at times. And as an association, we deal with those individual cases. And, you know, we're a bunch of professionals here that are really trying to do best for the kids in this province. And sometimes when it becomes the target, it's extremely frustrating and unfair. Not to say that every single teacher has experienced that, but we are seeing heightened levels of cases where that is occurring.
And indeed, you have processes that you have to undergo within the school system itself, and I suppose within the union structure and all of those kinds of things that oftentimes the general public is not even aware of. And in many cases, you can't even answer certain questions. So it must make it very difficult.
Well, yeah, it's exactly so. And we have to follow policy of the school board. We also have to follow ethical guidelines. You know, there's lots of different things. We're professional people who do what we need to do, and that's we have to do what we feel is right professionally as well for the child based on good educational practice and how we've been taught to teach and so on. So there's many things that come into play, but in the end, we have 30 faces or we have 25 faces in front of us and we do our thing to get these kids through the day. It's not as simple as saying, okay, open your book to Unit 1. It's not as simple as that anymore. We are raising children here. And in the schools, we need to get them from 9 to 3 o'clock or whatever the time frame is. And generally, even then, they're not leaving our minds. So that's really where it stands for our members.
Interaction with parents or guardians is absolutely key as well, and
I
find that so many teachers are so good at it. But has anything changed in recent years? Is it easier to communicate with the parents, or more difficult, or more challenging?
Yeah, well, you know, on the other side of my comment earlier is that we have a huge support system out there in parents who really value teachers and the work that they do. And so social media has benefited us because in a moment's notice, we can get a hold of a parent, or we can keep a parent up to date on things. If a parent needs to get us for something, we can do that. So there's huge advantages. But like anything, and I don't think the school system is the only system that's struggling with this. There's many organizations and businesses that are struggling with proper ways for their employees and their members to feel as if they're safe. And that's ultimately what it is. All we're asking for is respect and safety in the workplace. And it's unfortunately, the workplace has now extended to the internet or to social media. And it's unfortunate that that's the case, but that's the world we live in. And our kids are experiencing every day with their cell phones attached to their sides, aren't they?
Indeed, and is that becoming a bit of a problem? Because I know some teachers have a no cell phone policy, and that's kind of hard to enforce, especially nowadays.
It is, and every school has got different approaches to that. Again, we see great value in having those devices in the classroom, but once it starts impeding, that's when decisions had to be made. And some schools say, you check your phone at the door when you come in, or you leave your phone in your locker, and others say bring it in for certain periods where you're going to use it for, exploring various social studies concepts. It's a new reality, and we just need to accept the fact that they're there. It's like anything. If you use a tool inappropriately, happens to be a cell phone right now, it's going to cause trouble, and it's just appropriate use of it that we're looking for.
Do you feel there's general support in the general public and within government towards the job that you're doing?
I think so. I think from the research we've done ourselves, I think generally the public are very supportive of teachers, and we very much appreciate that. And it's reciprocal. We very much appreciate parents and very much appreciate the kids. You quickly look online and social media and see how excited our members were to get those kids back into school and to see them face-to-face, for God's sake, as opposed to having 30 boxes on a computer screen. What a way to try and engage with anyone. It's a reciprocal feeling, I think, in society that people value teachers and vice versa. But our teachers really value those parents who are willing to bring their concerns forward and deal with them respectfully, but also, show support where necessary and where possible.
Trent, we have a minute or so left because we're going to be coming out to go to news and then to the latest on Hurricane Larry.
Sure,
but any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that today is September 9th, and I know that we acknowledge lots of different days, but it's a day recognized by the United Nations General Assembly. It's the International Day to Protect Education from Attack, it's called. And ultimately what that is, it's the impact of losing education for women and girls in a lot of developing countries. And so I just want to say that because we're affiliates of the Canadian Teachers Federation, which is also affiliates of Education International. So even though our system here is quite strong and we're doing well, we can't forget education systems that are under attack in a lot of these developing countries and the impacts on women and girls specifically.
Indeed, and we're all too aware of some of the changing world events
for sure.
In recent months. So, Trent, a pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's been great, Linda. I really appreciate your time.
No problem, and I appreciate yours, and no doubt we'll be speaking again. Trent Langdon is the new president of the NLTA, a brand new school year ahead of us. Trent, once again, thank you. And he's gone. Thanks for listening.